It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
I wanted to let you guys know what it feels like to watch Tyson Fury, a man who's been very open about his beliefs, including the fact that homosexuality and the acceptance of it is a sign that the world is ending. It makes me feel like I don't matter. It makes me feel like my friends don't matter. It makes me feel like my partner doesn't matter. It takes me right back to my teenage years and my early childhood when I looked around and thought everybody was looking down on me, thinking that I'm lesser than just because of this way I was born. But I'm still going to watch, and I'm going to hope that it strengthens me, because it's because of guys like that that I have to fight every single day. Happy Pride, everyone.
Cofield and Company, Tuesday afternoon. Got Chrissy, Mark, Adam here in studio, and joining us, this is a real treat. We're pleasure to have with us Israel Gutierrez from ESPN. Izzy, thanks for making the time. We really appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
So you heard our rejoin playing from around the horn from about a week and a half ago now, and I was amazed by the strength of that, the courage of what you said on the show, and I'm just most curious about what reaction you've heard from friends, from family, from social media, whatever it's been over these last 10 days or so.
Yeah, thank you for that. The reaction's been overwhelmingly positive, I would say, of course, because I feel like that's been the case for me since I came out back in 2015. And I think the only sort of voices that were possibly different, we're saying a couple of things primarily. One of them being, you know, it is the fight game. It's the sewer, if you will, of sports. And especially when you consider, you know, where some of these fighters came from, and we almost accept that thought, not really accept it as, you know, it's the norm, just accept it from these particular athletes, and we sort of dismiss it. And, you know, to me, I think that's pretty dangerous, because regardless of whether you are blatant, like you're openly okaying the words or the language, other people are hearing it, and you know, other LGBT people are hearing it, and it's hurting them, like literally hurting them mentally. It's a form of mental abuse over and over that, you know, we hear growing up, and it just affects us in ways that people that aren't in that situation don't understand. So that was one of the common reactions, and the other one was a little bit of, you know, sympathy or empathy, if you will, for Tyson, who's got his history of, you know, mental illness or what have you, and or struggles with that. And I totally understand that. And this is not to condemn him as a human being overall. My whole point was how it makes others feel, meaning me and other LGBT people feel, because you're just entirely overlooking, you know, very bigoted, extremely bigoted comments and ridiculously harmful comments. And so I think, you know, it's nothing specifically against Tyson necessarily. It's just one example that I felt like I wanted to say something about.
Certainly. And when we look at the idea of it being dangerous, I'm really glad you brought that up, because whether we accept that something like that is an offhand thing from someone or a deeply held personal belief, it seems to me that it doesn't matter on the receiving end, because the message is the same no matter what you ascribe to the person who puts it out there. Do you feel like societally that we get a little too flip, a little too willing to say, oh, well, you know, that's just something that he said. He doesn't really mean it. He doesn't really hold that belief as deeply.
I mean, I look, it's just to say it's the same thing as we're sort of flippant, or not we, but a lot of people are flippant with the F word, the gay slur. And, you know, it's just like, oh, we never mean it like that. We're saying it on the playground, or we're saying it's still, there's a couple things about it. A, it still does the intended effect for those, or even whether an unintended effect, rather, for those who hear it, who are, whether it's made perhaps closeted LGBT or even open. It's like a dagger every single time, because it comes across as an insult. And it's, you know, it's not a negative thing to be gay, and we're not going to get to the whole back and forth on that. But I do think also that, you know, it's a sexist statement, because every time you're talking about somebody being gay as a negative, especially a man, you're talking about them being equated with a woman or showing feminine traits or what have you, and all of a sudden that is actually what you're speaking out against, is femininity. And that's not a problem. Femininity is not an issue for anybody, really. And so I just think it's something that people don't put or won't put enough time into thinking about it unless you sort of force them to. And so that's what I'm trying to do.
Yep, so we are talking about something, you know, that happened 10 days ago with the whole Tyson Fury thing. Something happened today on Twitter with Charlamagne Tha God, the host of The Breakfast Club. He tweeted, and I'm going to quote, "I kind of miss those days when everybody was lying to each other, meaning everyone was keeping their stuff to themselves. Your response was so absolutely on point, basically saying because you're gay, you had to keep quiet just to make just to make everyone else comfortable. How has the climate changed for you as a gay sports writer?"
Well, it's a great question, and I'll just say this about the Charlamagne Tha God comment, that he said it on the show The Breakfast Club, and he was talking to Andre Iguodala about Mark Jackson and supposedly being potentially blackballed from the league because Rick Welts, an executive with the Golden State Warriors, is openly gay. I think, you know, he was just he was trying to say that, you know, everybody's all in an uproar and everybody's arguing, everybody's standing up and saying these things for themselves. And, you know, back in the day, people weren't so loud, regardless of whether it was, you know, religious or sexuality or what have you. People weren't as loud, and he wishes that it would just die down some. Now, where I have a problem with that is, we are the only ones who could really hide who we were, right? And so you're asking us to go ahead and do that again. And while we are loud, we're not trying to be in your face for the purpose of being in your face. We're trying to educate you and let you know that we are just like you, just like any other minority group, and would love to be treated as such. And I think the climate-wise, I don't think much of that has changed, because it's just, again, it's language that makes people believe that others, that the majority or a good amount of people just think that they're lesser than. And it's, having lived through it my entire life, it creates long-term issues. Like me, I'm very fortunate to be where I'm at right now, but my whole life I've lacked confidence, and I've been ridiculously hard on myself. And it's because I felt I've had to live up to a higher standard just to be equal. And so there are way too many people having to live their lives like that. I've overcome it. I toughed it out, just like a lot of people do. But there are way too many people that turn to other things, whether it be drugs, whether it be harming themselves, or committing suicide. And that type of stuff, people don't want to take responsibility for, but it's exactly what the reason is. And so, you know, I'm glad to have these conversations all the time. For me as a sports writer, I don't mind taking ownership of that role. You know, if people want to call me, oh, the openly gay, you know, vocal sports writer, cool, that's fine. That means more to me. When I'm at my grave, will I be prouder that, you know, I had an impact on people's lives in terms of making it easier for them, in terms of letting people understand them, or would I be happier if I was, you know, some sort of celebrated sports talk show person? I obviously would take the former, and so I don't really mind taking ownership of it.
Talking to Israel Gutierrez of ESPN here on Cofield & Company, and I got to tell you, I was about ready to queue up an NBA question, but I got to go back to something you just said because it was so powerful. The idea of how hard you've been on yourself and how hard you've had to work just to feel equal. I mean, that's a statement that hit me straight in the heart when you said that. How has that played itself out for you, you know, prior to coming out and now since as well?
Well, yeah, it's interesting. And I've been working on a project where I've been talking to a lot of, you know, LGBT people, both in actual professional sports and just kind of recreational and whatnot. And what I'm finding is just so many similar stories, right? So a lot of people, or a handful of people, call it like the gay overachiever syndrome. It's because, you know, you have to, again, live up to a higher standard or prove yourself for some reason in any other facet of life before you can say to them, okay, I'm gay, and then let them judge you. You know what I mean? Because if you come out of the gate, and especially when I grew up, if you come out of the gate saying you're gay, then it's going to be a little bit more problematic. At least that's the way our minds see it or hear it every single day when we're closeted. And so Yeah, I think that's a lot of times that's what it turns into. And for me, it was, you know, eliminating any thought of worrying about a social life, like a real social life, you know, with partners, relationships and whatnot. I just eliminated that from my life. Like, it was not an option for me. And so I just focused on so many other things and worked really hard to the point where, you know, I finally came out, met somebody, started feeling good about myself, and then came out publicly. And basically my thought was, they can't really say anything negative about me. Look what I've done career-wise. If they've already made an assessment about me, it shouldn't change now because I'm coming out. And so that's what happens. And unfortunately, you know, I went through until I was 31 years old, literally never even going on a date in my life. And so a lot of that stuff just, you know, you just sort of transfer the energy to something else. And it just sucks because not everybody has to deal with that.
Speaking with Israel Gutierrez of ESPN on ESPN Las Vegas. I'm going to switch it up to a little bit of NBA. The Greek Freak collected 78 of 101 first-place votes for MVP. Me and Adam talked about this earlier in the show. Are we the only ones who thought that vote should have been much closer? I mean, not saying that Giannis didn't deserve it, but I did not see him running away with this award like that.
I'm just going to guess you guys were on the air when Around the Horn was on, because I actually was the only person saying that exact thing on the
show
today. I just thought James, there's a couple of biases working against him this year. One, he won it last year. And two, people just don't like to watch him play. And so they turn everything he does into, you know, they see it with a grain of salt or accept it with a grain of salt. And they say, but he's shooting a lot. The ball doesn't move. Whatever, man. He averaged way more points than Giannis. He averaged more assists than Giannis. Their assist to turnover was similar. Their PER was top two in the league. Like, they were neck and neck in terms of what it means to be valuable to your team. Where Giannis got the advantage is, you know, first place in the Eastern Conference, more wins. Everybody loves the dude. I mean, let's be honest. And there's no, like, if I would have had a vote this year, I didn't have a vote this year, but if I would have had a vote, I still think I probably would have voted for Giannis, but I would have had a real hard time with this one. The fact that it was as you know, big a difference as it was, big a gap as it was pretty shocking to me.
So, taking Zion out of the picture, okay? There's no there's no Zion Williamson. Which rookie has the biggest impact in the NBA this year?
Man, that's a tough question, only because I think it's going to be far and away Zion, but and this is going to be kind of boring, but I do think it's Ja Morant. I think Ja is going to be given the keys to that franchise and say, hey, Russell Westbrook me, if you will. And I think for that franchise and that organization, like, it's been a while since they've sort of transitioned from their grit and grind, and now they're, you know, going to be more exciting, and I think that's actually a huge thing for Memphis, you know, so hopefully they get some national attention from being more than just, you know, grit and grinders.
Question for you, also coming out of what Andre Iguodala was talking about today with the Breakfast Club, about the training situation, about the fractured leg from last year and about KD's situation. I feel like this could be interpreted a whole lot of different ways in terms of what he was saying about not only the training staff, but around the injury culture in professional sports. What did you take out of that portion of Andre Iguodala's comments?
You know, I think that it's you know, it's something that everybody's been examining because of Kevin Durant, obviously. I just think it's difficult, and this is just overall when it comes to this topic, I just think it's difficult to really assess much of anything from the outside perspective, from our perspective, unless we've got a full view of the medical information, unless we've got a full information on everything. And it's kind of the danger when it comes to the media reporting on this stuff and teams not, and I'm not saying they have to, but teams not giving out specific information on guys. And so we just sort of turned it into this narrative of you know, toughness and, you know, you've got to play and this is your legacy. And it's just, it's all nonsense. Like, it's all pretty much nonsense, and it's just the additional pressure from all sources I just don't think is healthy. And I think with this KD incident or any sort of incident you can point to in the past, things could have happened to other people as well in situations like this when they're trying to tough it out or what have you. So I just think it's a delicate situation.
Do you think we're reading too much into it at all if we start to extrapolate anything from how KD's situation was handled by the Warriors, by the training staff, and the free agency piece?
I don't think it's dangerous. I mean, I think it's real. And I think, here, if you put just give these doctors or whomever that are associated with the team truth serum, I think there is a bias that comes, or the decision-making becomes more difficult for them. And maybe they lean one way or the other with a nudge here or there. And I just think it's, you know, individual situations need to be assessed on their own. But I do think the players themselves, and those are the ones essentially in control of it all, the players themselves are going to be a lot more cautious after watching this Kevin Durant thing, whether they're a role player or, you know, a superstar. There's specific injuries you just don't mess around with, and that was one of them.
Joined by Israel Gutierrez, of ESPN, right here on ESPN Las Vegas. I'm going to make you think on this one, okay? With Luka Doncic winning the Rookie of the Year last night and Kristaps Porzingis set to return, is there a better duo under the age of 25 in the NBA than what the Dallas Mavericks will put on the court next year?
Under 25 is a tricky part because I don't really have those sort of players in my head. Like, I like the Atlanta duo. But I can't really think of too many others. And, like, of course, Kristaps has to come back and, you know, return to form. Doncic has to get better. But in terms of under 25, in terms of futures, like, Dallas is up there. And, in fact, they actually have some pieces if they wanted to trade, or a little bit of maneuverability here in the offseason. So I wouldn't be shocked if you're seeing a lot of them immediately next year.
All right, and I got a funny question for you. You obviously are an around-the-horn veteran. How does it feel? How does it feel to know Stu Gotts won around the horn with exactly 0 points?
Oh man, an around the horn veteran, that really makes me feel old. I think, look, any success that Stu Gotts gets, I champion. It's not just because, like, you know, I kind of helped him get on the show, and all the panelists did too, because we all love him, and we all just, you know, pushed it, and the producers are like, ah, screw it, we'll get him on. And so, not only that, though, it's that when I first met Stu Gotts, a.k.a. John Wiener, he was not on the Dan Le Batard show. He was sort of, you know, jumping in between different radio programs and whatnot. And I remember meeting this guy and thinking I needed a shower afterwards. Like, it was just slimy salesman, like, yeah, somebody that I just said, I would never be friends with a guy like that. I don't think I've ever told him that, by the way. But, and, you know, after, you know, actually getting to know him through the show, I mean, I love the dude, and there's a reason why America does, too.
All right, we'll finish with this, Izzy, and I apologize for being probably the 1,000th person in a row in an interview to ask you a question about this, but I watch HQ and I think to myself, I just want to have dinner with Poppy. I just want to hang out with him for a little while. Is it everything that it looks to us on television that it's like?
That one's a little bit different. He is a different animal. When the lights are on, he is a different animal. Now, it doesn't require the lights to be on necessarily. If you just put him in that mode and start talking sports, he will be exactly that person. So if you are at a dinner party, you tell him from the beginning, hey, we're going to talk sports the whole time, he will absolutely make your life happy, make you happy. But, yeah, overall, it's a little bit different. When those lights are off, he's back to business.
Fair enough. I think that might cover all of us to some degree. So,
and by the way, guys, before you let me go, I just want to say thank you, actually. Thank you for bringing up the initial topic. I was planning on, you know, picking up the phone and just talking NBA for 20 minutes or so, but that was very cool, and thank you for letting your audience hear that.
Oh, of course, man. We really appreciate you coming on and giving us some time.
And it's our opportunity to be able to talk to you about that subject with your experience, so thank you as well.
Thanks.
All right, Cofield & Company on a Tuesday afternoon. More in just a moment.